The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play Degenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? Afternoon, the city of Justitian, uptown. The office of locality had a permanent queue of appointments that went out the door and curved around the block. Some people paced, while others stood with their heads down, buried in the paperwork they were to present to Dara Youngbao, city official for the Office of Locality. The line moved slowly, accepting only one person at a time inside the small front lobby. Folks with a bundle of citizenship papers nervously shuffled forward, anticipating the worst news possible inside official Youngbao's office. Application denied. Etta gently maneuvered past the folks in line through the front wooden door. She flapped the hem of her leather duster and stomped her feet to dislodge any stray bits of gravel and dust that would carry into the clean interior office. A singular desk, well-kempt and sturdy, stood opposite the entryway. At it sat a middle-aged woman, adorned with earrings and a judge's habit. She waved a waving patron up with a come-hither motion without even looking up from her writing, keenly intent on filling out her logbook. Etta walked up alongside the would-be citizen and knocked on the corner of her desk to announce her presence. The secretary looked up with a perturbed face and thumbed Etta towards the door just behind her desk. Etta removed her hat and ran a hand over her head to smooth out her black hair. She approached the door, raising a hand to knock before the door opened from the other side. A young woman, several months pregnant, emerged from inside crying tears of what Etta perceived to be happiness. She was caressing her rotund stomach and tucked a freshly stamped parchment into a leather brief under her arm. She smiled warmly at Etta, and Etta returned the gesture, passing her to move through to the well-lit office of her father and city official, Darev Youngbao. The soft clinking of a quill and an inkwell, and the subsequent scribbling on thick paper was the only sound that filled the office as Etta closed the heavy door behind her. The thin man behind the desk was dressed in leather robes of dark brown, spotless and clean. The silver thread at the hems and sleeves perfectly matched his dark gray hair, styled and swept back with a refined, lightly scented grease. His wiry hands swiftly move across the parchment as he wrote, and he diligently moved his robe sleeve with his opposite hand, in time with his penmanship, to keep the fresh ink from staining the robe. You're late.
Well, so was your previous appointment.
Darev peered up over the top of his round spectacles, unamused. He continued writing as he spoke. Protector Kant couldn't find you among the Warrens and Defiler streets this morning, I assume. You've always been good at hide-and-seek. A memory put a small grin on Darev's lips. He looked up again to see Etta with a sour look on her face.
I've work to do, Father. Please let me leave so I can do it.
Darev removed his spectacles and rubbed his eyes with his fingers. Etta, try as I might to get you to do anything else besides judging, you stubbornly refuse.
That's because everything else is remedial, menial, and beneath me.
Please, this is hard enough for me as it is. He stood up from his desk and turned round to face out the small framed window opposite the door entrance and clasped his hands behind his back. You could have been safe, warm, and well cared for behind these walls, he said. He dropped his chin slightly before turning around to face his daughter. There is a traveling detachment being formed for diplomacy and data collection in Lukator. Your name has come up in the rotation, from Protector Kant. Etta's eyes widened with excitement, but she maintained her composure. You'll be traveling in a group slated to leave in 2 days' time for Territorial Region 3 in Pergare. Darev took a few measured steps towards Etta as he spoke. His voice changed from the matter-of-fact city official tone he used for new citizens to an entreating one. And I am the only voucher you have to stay in Justician, should you decide to do so. Etta stroked her chin, vaguely hearing anything past traveling detachment. Her wide judge's hat was held lazily at her side. A dozen thoughts raced through her head as the promise of a new frontier loomed on the horizon for her. With whom would she be traveling? What kind of sights would she see? Would the Alpine Fortress of the Helvetics be everything she imagined it was? Darev interrupted her brief daydream with his own pressing request. Please, Etta, tell me you'll stay and retire this winter from the judiciary.
With a meager pension that forces me to wed a lecherous and two-faced Silvano. I'd rather kiss a wild Jendo and would sooner die.
Insolence! It is our family name that is dying!
Etta was ill at ease by the outburst from the normally collected man she knew. She could see a stray bit of silver hair out of place on his forehead, and it further unnerved her. Darev Youngbow breathed in and out to calm himself, and ran a free hand through his oiled hair, before reaching out and touching Etta's arm a bit stiffly.
Forgive my tantrum. Ever since your mother... Well, you know as well as I the toll her absence has left. We've grieved together for 4 years now, but the wounds still throb.
Etta touched her father's elbow gently.
I would never begrudge Milena her dying wish to live as you see fit, daughter mine. But I beseech you, ignore this detachment command and live your days in peace. With me. The Silvanos are incredibly wealthy, and with my station and your dowry, no harm would ever come to you. Besides, with such great care offered to you, wouldn't you want children to honor mine and your mother's memory?
Etta squeezed her father's arm tenderly before removing it from hers.
Of course, father. But I want children on my own terms, and with a partner who isn't part of some grand plot to control half of downtown for their own gain. You know I actually patrol these streets, right?
Darev tucked his hands inside his robes and paced about, frustrated.
Yes, yes, of course. Some great destiny calls to you beyond the ether. I think it is folly to put such stock in fantasies of coupling just for love. Those aspirations are the stuff of fairy tales and myths.
His rebuttal was layered with disdain, and he was close to flying off the handle again, but he caught the gaze of his daughter, misty-eyed, and he relented.
You are your mother's daughter, after all. Well, regulations be damned. If you are to travel the wastes and swamps, you deserve to be well outfitted.
The city official walked back to his desk and slid out a knotted wooden drawer just below the desktop surface. He leaned over to make sure he'd emptied the entire contents of the drawer and shut it swiftly, passing over a large handful of chronicler draft bills to Etta's outstretched hand.
It should go without saying you've earned your bonus, City Judge Etta. Keep your authority rigid and unyielding.
Etta beamed and gripped the brim of her hat tightly. She wheeled around to leave as Darev called out behind her.
I suppose your last order of business before your briefing is to visit the Steel Masters to retrieve your new flintlock shot.
Etta stopped mid-pace and ran back, throwing a huge hug onto her father. He patted the back of her shoulders warmly, but briefly, before squirming a bit in her embrace. Etta released him and took a step back, bowing at the waist and wearing a smile.
Thank you, Father. Per aspera ad astra.
He ushered her to the door while saying,
Safe travels, daughter. Pray to your mother. She'll hear you better than I will in the Southlands and pass the Reaper's blow.
The door opened and the line of people looked up hopefully. Etta exited, donning her hat and thumbing the brim up as she scooted past the waiting patrons. She heard him call loudly behind her.
Next!
The excitement to travel out of the city quelled all hostility and frustration with her father as she covered up her face with a thick, patterned scarf.
A different kind of judgment, but as blunt as a hammer. Is he really that surprised I'm going?
Etta thought. The dust swirled sharply under Etta's boots,
as she stepped back into the afternoon sun and saw the illuminated obelisk of steel and rivets rising above even the top of Uptown. The imposing steel monolith beckoned Etta to partake in its belching fire and flame-made weapons of authority and justice. Afternoon, the City of Justician, level 2 of the cluster underneath Uptown. The Chronicler Multithread busied his hands with a cuboidal puzzle as he lay stretched out on his pod bunk. The hexagonal pod was identical in structure to the hundreds of others stacked on top and to the side of it, like some enormous technological beehive drenched in soft blue light. The tactile click and clack of each turn on the puzzle gave him bumps of endorphins as the pieces slid into place. The soundproof pod offered him a small reprieve from the noise of the hangar a dozen or so meters away. But the polyplastic glass screen was to be kept clean and free of debris to allow any passing drone or paradigma unrestricted sight inside. But the lack of privacy didn't bother Multithread. There were always ways to interact nonverbally, particularly with Pseudo, one of his few friends in the cluster. He fiddled with the cube some more until he hit a logic impasse. This will require some more thought. Perhaps Pseudo has gotten past it before and can give me a free gate to move forward, he thought. He looked down at his wrist pad and saw the display counting down in its own strange binary language. The display zeroed out, and he looked up to see a familiar shape come into the view of his pod. He jumped up and walked to unlock the magnetized door lock. The negative pressure in the room let a small breeze inside that ruffled his plastic cape as Pseudo moved past him. The hood was thrown back, revealing a thin, freckled face framed by short and messy brown hair. The darkened lines of the barcode tattoo on her forehead reflected no light as the hood fell, as it had dithered slightly with age. Pseudo smiled at Multithread with several silver-capped teeth scattered across the top and bottom rows. "Pseudo, Git! Greeting!" Multithread said cheerfully. Pseudo began signing with her hands, and Multithread nodded his head at each bend of the fingers and flick of the wrist. "I am well. Runtime errors and bad paths have led to stagnation with this." He held up the puzzle cube, soft orange lights pulsing to indicate a paused timer on the incomplete logic. "I anticipate your additional memory can help me solve for completion." Pseudo took the cube in her slender hands and turned it over several times, mentally marking where Multithread had left off. After a few seconds, Pseudo twisted the cube's top and bottom sides at the same time, opening a new gate and turning the orange lights green. She handed it back and signed again, raising an eyebrow at the end. "Null and void. I have bandwidth to spare. I was only stymied for 2 cycles before you arrived," Multithread replied, pretending to be hurt. Pseudo smiled again, briefly, before it dissipated, her fair hands gesturing rhythmically. Multithread nodded. "Affirmative. I have a digipad on my person." And he passed over the tablet screen sitting idly on his neatly made bunk. Pseudo typed as fast as she signaled, and Multithread completed another puzzle challenge in the time it took Pseudo to finish typing her message. He activated another level before Pseudo replaced the cube in his hand with the display showing a bunch of text. Multithread read quickly from top to bottom and looked up, confused. "Where are you relocating?" Pseudo remained quiet, and her hands stayed still. "When will you return?" Again, silence. Only the blue buzz light filled the dead air between them. Multithread sniffled, and Pseudo snapped her fingers to get his attention. She shook her head sternly, not willing to put up with any show of sadness. Multithread stiffened and quickly rubbed his nose before responding. "If you rejoin the network cluster in Justician, then we will continue signal practice. Else, if no rejoin, then this one finds new downtime," Multithread said. Pseudo nodded curtly and stood up. She spelled out each individual letter of the word memory and touched the barcode tattoo on Multithread's head with her pointer finger. The door of the geometric pod was open and shut again as Multithread watched Pseudo retreat down the catwalk as quickly as she'd come, past the hundreds of other identical pods stacked like honeycombs in the darkness of the underground. Generic, and interlinked. Evening, the City of Justition, level 3 of the cluster underneath Uptown. Rubber boot heels clopped down the mesh floor, the echoes bouncing off of the surrounding metal of the walls and security portals. Wires and electric nodes filled every nook and cranny of space between the steel panels and poked out from gaps in the mesh floor underneath Sudo's feet, like coiled snakes with blackened skin. She approached the terminal granting access to the network. She scanned her wrist-mounted pad, and the primary door hissed open. She stepped through, triggering an array of blue lasers that swept the interior and scanned her forehead barcode, the flesh warming slightly from the intense lumens of the beam. Speakers barked out think machine authentication noises and spoke at Sudo.
Sudo, mediator access, level 3, non-breach.
The secondary door unlatched and slid inward into its pocket receiver. A cacophony of white noise and vocoder chatter filled Sudo's mind. She strode across the walkway of a long, rectangular room, dodging chroniclers in the midst of exchanging data and pointing out comings and goings on the huge image walls above their heads. Another maskless mediator approached Sudo and handed them a new digipad, amber text crawling across the screen with the newest task feed information. The information was authenticated, verified with a tap, and handed off again to another mediator. Sudo passed a few more units helping each other swap parts in an image wall display that were being gathered from a disassembled flight drone leaning against the workstation. The network on level 3 in the Chronicler's cluster broadcasts all daily updates from the city above here simultaneously. Observers like Bits and Agents send their readouts from downtown into the network, while surveillance drones and cameras installed in Uptown deliver the feeds for immediate assessment. It's a ceaseless bombardment of information, dictating the measures implemented by the chroniclers and forcing them to survey their next steps. Only if all meaningful options are revealed can logistics be put in place to counteract and govern a splintered society such as Justition. Do the judges work in favor of the cluster? Is the cartel conspiring against members of its own organization? Can potential traitors be manipulated to act in the best interest of the cluster? The mediators run these operations, executing predictions of the nonlinear outcomes of any current event, brokering on whether the cluster must intervene or if the acquired intelligence can be archived as junk. The evaluation process conducted in this think tank is mentally excruciating, bordering on the scale of a never-ending chess game that features millions of pieces and billions of possibilities. While seated in front of her own terminal, Sudo receives a radio squelch ping on her shoulder-mounted receiver, and she quickly flipped on her vocoder. She inserts an earpiece and brings the microphone to her lips.
Sudo 19, ready to receive new tasking and status update.
She waited a beat to make sure instructions were received before responding to the voice in her earpiece.
All command given. Execute supply run before departure. Affirmative, Streamer Lisa. Emotions among the agents in the hangar dwelling pods are quelled. Prime query, will this one be able to visit the mainframe once more before depart? Negative value. Understood. Sudo 19. Over and out.
The radio transmitter clicked off, and Sudo gnashed her silver teeth as she paced around, squeezing her hands open and closed to calm herself.
Insular fragments. Withholding streamers. Keeping. Only distributing what they know to be true, and nothing more. My time will come, because Sudo 19 knows her place. She knows the stream encompasses all. Fractals unfold reality and manifest new iterations. Just for this one.
The mantra of the chroniclers brought her back to center as she swiveled around in her chair to face the image wall. The camera feeds showed a bird's-eye view of a group of Anabaptists helping the firefighters of Justition's Firewatch, quenching flames overtaking an old bakery in the cross quarter. The smoky flames flickered on screen in Sudo's brown eyes as she settled into cataloging the data stream to further move up the chain.
I'm sure the flames of conspiracy in Lucatore will be just as treacherous. Hopefully I'm not recording smoldering cinders when I arrive. Hard to parse usable data from carbonized flesh.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Escheton. And be sure to check out my WordPress site, where I post more in-depth game mechanics and character outlines at echoesofescheton.wordpress.com.